the documentaries, you know, they look fine, but actually being there when you've got 10,000 Emperor Penguins surrounding you and those chicks and the soundscape you get from an Emperor Penguin colony is absolutely amazing. The high-pitched fluting of the chicks and the low trumpeting of the adults, it's such an emotive place to be.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ice. My name is Em Newton, and this is the podcast from British Antarctic Survey, where we explore newsworthy topics and science from the polar regions. In this episode, we're going to be talking about everybody's favourite Antarctic creature, the Emperor Penguin. Now, this iconic species is the tallest and heaviest of all living penguin species, and it lives solely in Antarctica. From March of the Penguins to Happy Feet, these penguins have a real place in popular culture, but unfortunately they've been going through quite a tough time in the last few years. We've seen a number of news stories talking about how emperor penguins have been affected by early breakup of sea ice and the loss of chicks before they develop their waterproof feathers. I'm joined today by Peter Fretwell, who's a remote sensing specialist and prolific penguin expert at British Antarctic Survey. Hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So, your new research suggests that the emperor penguin population has declined by 22% over the last 15 years. What was the most surprising thing about these findings in comparison to previous estimates?
Well, we know that the penguin population has been in trouble because of warming in Antarctica in certain areas and ice loss. We weren't sure exactly what the outcome was and how those populations were changing. There had been previous studies showing that the emperor penguin population had been changing slightly, but they really didn't encompass the last decade, really, where we've had really sharp ice loss and climate increase. So the surprising thing was that when we extended the time record into the more recent past, we found that actually the population had declined significantly. Now, this is only a proportion of the population, only about 30% of the whole population. So it might not be the all the way around Antarctica, but this was surprising because it was much more serious than we thought.
Yeah, so this was focused on a really specific region of Antarctica. Can you describe what area you were measuring?
Yeah, so this was about a quarter of the Antarctic coastline, and the areas including the Weddell Sea, the Bellingshausen Sea, and the Antarctic Peninsula. It, as I say, encompasses about 30% of the emperor penguin population.
Why did you pick that area?
Well, it's an area that we've seen climate change. We know that the Antarctic Peninsula is warming. We've seen sea ice loss there, in both on the peninsula and the Bellingshausen Sea. But we've also seen areas there that haven't experienced sea ice loss, like the Weddell Sea, and are quite stable. So it's a really good comparison between those two areas.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, so the idea is that you have fair representations of both these kinds of changing or not unchanging habitats.
Exactly.
So 22% is obviously a much larger number than previous estimates. So, and as you said, part of how you've arrived at this 22% figure is that you have taken in the last couple of years. Can you explain what the previous estimate was?
So the previous estimate went up to about 2018. What we've seen since about 2016 is that the sea ice regime in Antarctica has changed, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, well, since about 2022, when we've seen record sea ice loss consecutively for several years. And we were fairly certain that this would have an impact on the emperor penguins. But strangely, what we also found was that the emperor penguin populations had started declining even before we got sea ice loss. So it's not just the sea ice which is driving population change. It's probably other environmental factors too.
Okay, let's dive into that then. So why, in short, is sea ice so important to emperor penguins? Because obviously their decline has been strongly linked to the loss of sea ice.
Absolutely. Emperor penguins, they live on the sea ice. They breed on the sea ice. They hunt for their prey under the sea ice. They molt on the sea ice. Their whole life cycle is around the sea ice. And they use the ice, the fast ice, the ice which is stuck to the coast, as a stable breeding platform. And we've seen in several colonies over the last few years that as the sea ice is reducing, it breaks up earlier. And if that happens at the emperor penguin colonies when the chicks are still young, they go into the water and perish. And we wondered if that was driving the populations.
Okay, here's a question. So why aren't the penguins just going onto the land?
So in most cases, the land in Antarctica is great big sort of ice shelves, and there's usually an ice cliff. So for most coastlines, you just can't get up onto the land. There's a great cliff, it might be 100 feet tall, that the penguins can't get onto that cliff. But also, it's more exposed on the cliffs. There's often no snow that they need to rehydrate. And it's further from the sea where they have to eat. They occasionally do go onto the land if they can get up there and if the ice doesn't form, but they'd much prefer to go on and live on the ice.
Is the proportion of the coastline around Antarctica being cliff a key factor here in terms of which colonies might really be suffering when they see this breakup of sea ice?
There could be. We certainly see that in places where there are continual ice cliffs, like large ice shelves, there just aren't colonies that go onto the shelves there. But it might be an adaptation that some of the colonies do use in future as we get less and less sea ice.
So before we go on to other factors that might be affecting the emperor penguin populations, are you able to say a bit about the overall trends in sea ice that we've been seeing over the last few years?
Yeah, so up until about 2015, sea ice in Antarctica was stable. We hadn't predicted that. We thought it would go down. It was stable. In some cases, it was increasing slightly. But after 2015 and 2016, it really declined sharply. It bounced back a little bit, but in the last 4 years, it's really declined. We think it's gone past a tipping point. We don't think it'll ever get back to the stage it was before, and it may well continue to decline. And this is really worrying for emperor penguins, but also for many other species that rely on the sea ice as their habitat and environment.
And your paper suggests that there could be a number of other climate-driven factors that aren't specifically sea ice. Could you talk a bit about what those factors might be?
The surprising thing, really, one of the surprising things was that the emperor penguin populations were going down even before we had sea ice loss. So it's not just the sea ice which is driving this trend. But even though we weren't getting sea ice loss, we were still seeing warming temperatures, warming oceans around that period. We think that other environmental factors like rainfall and increase in other species coming into the realm of the emperor penguin is one of the things that's driving those populations. You get more predation from orcas, you get more competition from other penguin species and things like that. As the sea ice breaks up earlier or dissipates, other things can come in and compete for food. But also the rainfall factor is important because the chicks just aren't adapted to deal with rainfall. When they're bigger, they can probably deal with it, but when they're young and those little fluffy balls we see on the documentaries, that it just isn't rain sort of just drenches them, and then when it goes cold overnight, they freeze, and we see a lot of mortality in the chicks if we get rainfall events, and that could be one of the things that's driving the populations here is more rain.
Oh, so just fluffy little ice cubes. That's so sad.
Unfortunately, so.
Okay, so in order to come to the conclusions that you have in your new research, you aren't going to Antarctica necessarily to go and count individual colonies of emperor penguins. You're doing a lot of this through satellite observation. Can you explain how you go about making an estimate of an emperor penguin population using satellite imagery?
So yes, we use satellites now. Emperor penguin colonies are so remote around Antarctica that it's almost impossible to get to most of them. People only go to a handful of colonies each year. There are 66. Almost half of them have never been visited by humans before. So we have to use satellites to count them, and we can send the satellites there every year when the sun returns to Antarctica in the spring, and we take an image of each colony. We then use a machine learning algorithm based on the spectral reflectance of the penguins to classify how much area of penguin there is. So in the old days, we used to use the guano signal, but now we're actually just looking at the penguins themselves. And then we can work out a density estimate. We've got some ground truthing, and we can say, actually, it's about 1 meter per penguin that we see. So we count up the area of penguins, and then we can work an estimate out from that. And we do that each year over these 15 years for all the colonies we look at and get a population trend.
That's so interesting that you're using machine learning now rather than counting by more manual methodology. Are you still spotting the penguin colonies in the first place via their guano stains?
Yes. So each year we have to go because they move around a lot. So in some cases that might move 30 kilometres It's not like the smaller penguins, which are always in the same place. The emperor penguins, depending, have to be very dynamic because the sea ice changes. So they have to have that in their locker to be able to move to places where the sea ice is better. So because of that, we have to go and spot them. We use that using coarser resolution imagery and looking for those brown stains on the ice. And then when we found them, we send the high resolution satellites to go and estimate their numbers.
When you say send a satellite, are you diverting the course of the satellite, or is it about the where cameras are pointing, or is it about data and who gets to call on particular data time?
Yeah, so it's we don't actually divert the satellite. It's more a case of we ask the satellite to take a photo, and then the satellite will train its camera, point its camera into the right place to take that photo, so that it wouldn't take a photo normally, but it can change its orientation so it takes a photo of a certain place.
I didn't realize it was that dynamic. I thought it was just kind of like an ongoing kind of video scan or something like that.
Some of the satellites are, but the really high resolution ones, you basically tell them where you want an image and it goes and takes one for you.
So with machine learning, is there kind of an uncertainty or a potential error in that kind of computerized approach? Does it have any kind of pros or cons compared to doing it via more manual means?
Yes, but actually the largest uncertainty in the analysis we've done is just how many penguins are there at the time. So there is a small amount of uncertainty in the methodology of the automation. But there's a much greater uncertainty to do with how many adults and chicks are there, because it's dark in the winter when all the adults are there. We can't count them then. We have to wait till the spring. And in the spring, sometimes often there's quite a variable amount of adults when we count them. So we have to take that into account. But because we've got about 240 different analyses here, we can say with some confidence that the statistical trend is correct. If you had one colony, you're never quite sure because there is a bit of variance in the methodology. But if you do it again and again and again, all of these colonies for multiple years, then it gives you confidence that the trend you're seeing is actually robust.
Okay, so you've done a lot of this research by satellite, but you have been to Antarctica a number of times. So presumably you have seen emperor penguins in real life up close. What's that like?
Oh, it's great. The documentaries, they look fine, but actually being there when you've got 10,000 emperor penguins surrounding you, and those chicks, and the soundscape you get from an emperor penguin colony is absolutely amazing. The high-pitched fluting of the chicks and the low trumpeting of the adults, it's such an emotive place to be. So, yeah, I've been there to the emperor penguin colonies 3 times doing research and putting tags on emperor penguins. So it's a really real privilege to go out there and work on them.
So, this piece of research is based on a really specific segment of Antarctica. Do you have plans to work out if it holds for the whole of Antarctica?
Yes, that's definitely the next step. We are going to acquire imagery of the rest of the coastline and see if this worrying trend is actually happening there as well around all Antarctica.
So, what does this tell us about the kind of long-term prognosis for emperor penguins? Because there was an existing estimate that they would be facing extinction around or slightly after 2100. Does that still stand?
There have been models about what will happen to the emperor penguin population over the coming decades, up to the end of the century. And they were, as you say, predicting that we would be almost extinct. We'd lose 99% of the population. The really worrying thing about this research is that our actual data for this sector is actually worse than those models. So it could be, if the rest of the continent is doing the same, then we will face sort of possible extinction before the end of this century. We didn't, and that's a really worrying conclusion to come to.
Very worrying, particularly I think in terms of the way that we look ahead to potential climate impacts across many areas of life in many parts of the world. There's a lot of stuff that talks about the end of the century and later decades in this century, and it's interesting to see some research start to bring that estimate forward.
Models are always useful to give us an indication of what might happen, but not all models. We know models are just only a best guess, which often we haven't got the right parameters for. And we tend to look at these models and think that's possibly the worst case scenario, but it's not always the case. Sometimes the models are an underestimate of what is actually happening, and that seems to be the way here with the emperor penguins. So it's not just the emperor penguins that really are indicative here. This is a sea ice ecosystem, but it's also a model for what might happen to other ecosystems in the world. Antarctica is changing rapidly, much more rapidly than most places on Earth. But those changes that we're seeing now in Antarctica at the moment are the changes that the rest of the world will see in a few decades' time. And we will almost certainly see these rapid and huge changes in ecosystems and climate and everything that we know changing as we get increased warming.
Okay, well, on the topic of ecosystems, is there any sense that there's going to be problems for penguins in terms of what they're eating?
Well, emperor penguins forage under the sea ice generally, so they don't really compete with things like fisheries, which other smaller penguin species do. But as the sea ice gets less, as the extent gets smaller, there'll be less habitat for them to forage under. So it's quite likely that is a limiting factor on the populations as well.
Why is it that emperor penguins are so specifically affected by this when there's so many other species of penguin that seem to be doing relatively well?
Well, there's two reasons really. Firstly, emperor penguins breed on sea ice, and sea ice is very, very sensitive to climate change. But the other thing is that virtually all of the other penguin species interact some way with humans. They live further north, and they interact more from fisheries and other changes in habitat. Whereas emperor penguins live in such a remote place that they really don't interact with humans at all, that they don't forage in fishery areas, and they haven't been hunted in the past. So the only driver of their population is the environment around them. And that's why there's such a good indication of what's happening with global warming.
Okay, so it's not necessarily that the others aren't facing environmental or human-based pressures, it's that the emperor penguins are really at the start of this journey in terms of the overall trajectory for them.
Yes, the other penguin species are definitely facing this as well. But the signal with other penguin species is sometimes a little clouded by other pressures, often with fisheries, or with previous hunting or things like that. With emperor penguins, that's not the case. They've never interacted with humans before. So here we have a very clear signal of what's happening to a species that's only being affected by climate change.
So one of the things we do at BAS is provide evidence to policymakers. So what are the routes available to passing on this research to policymakers and decision makers around the world? How are you involved in that?
So the main route that we use is the Antarctic Treaty Meeting. Every year, the parties from each of the nations come together and discuss policy in Antarctica, and really try and work out the rules, but also get the message out about how Antarctica is changing. And we put papers forward, and there is a paper going in this year, later this month, to the Antarctic Treaty about this research that we've been doing.
So, is there any conservation measure that could help emperor penguins, or was it really just a question of overall climate change and an emissions-based solution?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. It has to be an emissions-based solution. There's nothing that we can do. We can't put the ice back. It's too vast a system to actually change in any meaningful way. We can't warm, or we can't cool the planet down. We can't stop it raining or cool down the atmosphere for them. This is something that only a global scale change will make, really reducing carbon and methane emissions, bringing down global warming generally is the only thing that will really change the prognosis and the forward trend of emperor penguin populations and many other ecosystems, both in Antarctica and around the world.
Cool. And then, well, what on earth can we, as a final question, there's not a lot of hope, is there?
It's one of those, I find this with emperor penguin things especially, that it's hard to be positive. I think what you have to say is like, is that there is still time to save the emperor penguin. As there really is still time to save the penguin, as long as we act soon to reduce emissions, and to turn around the cycle and the trend that we're on globally with a warming planet.
That was a great answer. Okay, and finally, I hear you've got a book coming out.
I have indeed, yes. Myself, my wife, have written a book, which is coming out in this September, the Penguin Book of Penguins,
Oh.
published by Penguin Random House, who've never actually published a book called the Penguin Book of Penguins before. So this is a first for them as well. And it's just a general purpose book telling some of the amazing adaptations and facts and charismatic things about penguins, but also with a serious message about how humans have interacted with them in the past and how they're doing with things like habitat loss and climate change. So a really easy to read small book, which will be coming out later this year.
I cannot imagine a better match of publisher and topic.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Ice. If you enjoyed this episode, please do consider recommending it to friends and family or leaving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. We also turn this podcast into a subscription newsletter fast read available on LinkedIn. Just search Beyond the Ice LinkedIn and you'll find it. See you next time.